And welcome back to Coast. Two special guests for you tonight will take calls in the last hour. Nurse Joyce Riley has been a director of nursing for four institutions. She also served as a captain in the USAF in support of Operation Desert Storm, flying active duty missions on a C-130 aircraft from Alaska to Cuba. Her experience as a medical legal testifying expert in medical malpractice trials have given her the background to investigate the truth about the Gulf War illness. She presently serves as a spokesperson for the American Gulf War Veterans Association. She has her own radio show called The Power Hour, and we'll give you more information on that as well. Let me introduce again back to Coast. She's been a regular with me since 1997, Joyce Riley. Joyce, how are you?
I am blessed, and I am so glad to be here tonight to tell you what's going on. I'm just really honored. Thank you so much, George.
Thank you. And, of course, we had Joyce on just about a week ago, and I said, Joyce, we're going to do a major program on this, and this, of course, being PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome, that so many of our soldiers are coming back from all these wars, and they're all screwed up. Dr. Doug Rocky is with us, a retired major of the U.S. Army, and was the director of the U.S. Depleted Uranium Project. Doug authored the official Pentagon training video on depleted uranium usage, protection, and treatment. The DOD failed to ever show this video because of the severity of the consequences of the depleted uranium. Major Rocky appears in the Beyond Treason DVD as well. Here's Dr. Doug Rocky. Doug, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you very much, and God bless for having us on, sir.
Joyce, I want you to set the stage for us and tell us the problem, the scope of the problem that we're dealing with.
We're dealing with a situation that is absolutely out of control. One out of every five suicides in this country today, and I'm talking about across the board of all suicides, is a veteran. The homeless veterans are absolutely off the scale. The problem with the homicides and the suicides of the veterans is, as a result, I believe, because of the failure to treat these veterans, the failure to appropriately diagnose them, and the failure to care for the returning veterans. What we're looking at now are veterans that are absolutely losing it. They have no way to get any kind of help. The VA is not there for them. And when they do go to get help, they're placed on SSRI drugs or psychotropic drugs or Risperdal, Wellbutrin, whatever, which only makes the problem worse. And so we have a Department of Defense now that is attempting to deny this whole thing by calling it PTSD or calling it brain injury, TBI brain injuries, and leaving these guys basically to fend for themselves. And that's why we're seeing this incredible amount of group of veterans that have no place to go, nothing to do, and the DOD now wants to downsize the military because they know exactly what I used to tell you back in 97. And that is that if we don't get them out of the military now, they're going to be sick, they're going to show up as sick, and we're going to have some explaining to do. So to get them out without compensation, they're letting them go now.
And they're doing, and they've got it down to a science now, Joyce, don't they? They know when to get them out. They know how to get out of this situation before they get bitten for it.
Bingo. And in fact,
Paul Wellstone.
Yeah, Wellstone. Senator Paul Wellstone. He told me in a conference call, and I know that Dr. Rocky, whom I have so much respect for, he also was involved in this, said that about 80% of the Gulf War veterans in 1995 had been discharged, so that we had basically a new military because these guys were sick and because they didn't want to compensate them. He was aware of this factor. And so that brings in Dr. Doug Rocky, who is probably the most professional, established person on the subject of depleted uranium, because he and I both agree that a lot of this so-called PTSD or neurological impairment that we're seeing from these troops that are committing suicides and homicides is that they are affected adversely, horrendously, by depleted uranium.
Doug, let's bring you in here, and first of all, give us a little bit more background than the bio on your work as the director of the U.S. Depleted Uranium Project. And Doug, please explain to some of us who might not be aware of what depleted uranium actually is.
Well, thank you very much. Well, my military career started back in 1967. First enlisted in the U.S. Air Force and spent my 2 years in Vietnam, came back home and got out, went to college. And spent that time. Then back in 1980, I went back into the Illinois Army National Guard as a combat medic. And then rapidly, within 3 years, the Army Reserve came to me and said, we need you as an instructor and expert in nuclear, biological, chemical warfare, and emergency medicine on the battlefield. And I go, thank you very much. And for 3 years, I taught that all over the Midwest and beyond. And then in 1986, all of a sudden, they came on down from a place called Fort Sheridan, Illinois, and said, plop, plop, fizz, fizz, you're going from a senior NCO to a second lieutenant. This was some 19 years after I first came in, and ended up on the command staff and expert nuclear, biological, chemical warfare, which includes all the radiological stuff and hazardous materials and preventive medicine. And then Desert Storm came along, and, as everybody knows, Iraq absolutely had chemical and biological materials prior to start Operation Desert Storm in 1990.
That's because we gave it to them, right?
Absolutely. The Regal Commission report, which, you know, again, I think you've got to post it on your website or you can. I know Joyce has it on her website, definitely for sure, with the power arm beyond treason. So we knew that they had them, and our team was very specifically assigned. Now, this is a big difference from Vietnam, where in Vietnam, our team was assigned to kill and destroy. In Desert Storm now, because of all our expertise and experience, we were assigned to bring them back alive.
Mm-hmm.
And we made the decision in December of 1990 at the command headquarters, this is with Norman Schwarzkopf and Chuck Horner and everybody else, that we would blow up Iraq's chemical stockpiles in place to prevent the deliberate use of them on the coalition forces. Anybody has any questions about that, they can obviously go to General Schwarzkopf's autobiography, It Doesn't Take a Hero.
That's right.
Go to page 390 and just read it for yourself. The reality is, so we did. And as a consequence, we released all these chemical and biological stockpiles, hazardous materials, all of the destruction hazardous materials from the infrastructure, released back on the troops and got everybody sick, extraordinarily sick to begin with. Then the ground war came along. And because of the anticipation of chemical biological, because of the anticipated, which would end up turning non-real threat of Iraqi armor, we decided to use uranium munitions.
And why? Is it just a tough, tough type substance?
Well, it's incredibly killing. It's the best killing machine that we've ever invented. I mean, it was invented by the Germans at the end of World War II. The U.S. military picked it up in the 60s, and then by Desert Storm came around, it was ready in full deployment for our military. Depleted uranium munitions are the radioactive byproduct of the enrichment process where the Department of Energy makes reactor fuel and nuclear weapons.
They're like little dirty bombs, aren't they?
Oh, they're perfect little dirty bombs. What they are, you've got different ones. A kinetic energy penetrator, which is like a gigantic dart of solid radioactive materials, uranium, and there's a whole bunch of really nasty isotopes in there. And what happens when you throw this through the air, or it's fired through the air, it goes extraordinarily high velocity. On impact, which it's already on fire, on impact it breaks up and it sends just incredible amounts of radioactive particles through the air, causing secondary explosions and fires beyond comprehension. There's nothing that survives.
So it's a destructive weapon in that it really does have some explosive power to it.
Yeah, the explosive power is from secondary explosions and detonations because, you know, you're throwing a uranium. Think about this, a whole room full of BBs moving at extraordinarily high velocity, all in fire.
Okay.
Anything that can burn, burns. That's why they use it on apartment buildings, water treatment facilities, hospitals, everything else. You know, houses, bunkers, you name it. And then against the armor, the kinetic energy penetrator just penetrates everything and causes massive secondary explosions. And when I did the research on this for the U.S. Army, and it ended up being all of NATO, at the Nevada test site in Mercury, Nevada, we blew everything up. It was incredible what we learned. So those are kinetic energy penetrators. For example, the Abrams tank fires a single round that's over 10 pounds of solid uranium. It's the perfect dirty bomb. Then the A-10 fires one that's over 3/4 of a pound, and then get them all the way on down to the, you know, machine guns and, handheld rifles.
What's the intent, Doug? Is it to destroy structure or to kill off people instantly?
Well, everything. Everything and everything and everything.
Okay.
And that's what we learned. Then we have what we call the cluster bombs, and these are the ATEM and the PETEM. So think about a softball where the outer casing of the softball is radioactive material and is filled with high explosives.
Okay.
Then we have the cluster bombs and everything else. So this is the perfect killing machine. And during Desert Storm, what they called it was the silver bullet. Well, the commanding general at that time, when all this stuff is happening, they got really worried. And as you've seen, you've got the documentation, the paperwork support, everything.
Yeah.
What happened is they got scared. And all of a sudden, here's this order came on down from the Pentagon and told General Schwarzkopf personally, find Doug Rocky and tell him to clean it up. And also his chief of staff did, and we went forward to start cleaning up the mess.
Which is almost impossible.
And that's what I learned. It was almost impossible. We did the best we could during Desert Storm. We had 15 Abrams tanks that were destroyed by friendly fire, U.S. Abrams tanks that were destroyed by friendly fire. We brought 9 back to the United States. We buried a lot. We had 16 Abrams tanks that were destroyed, and we brought those back. And then, obviously, we had an incredible number of casualties. By my count, it was 123 individuals that survived the friendly fire during the Desert Storm. And the most frightening thing is, and Joyce has been totally involved in this, even within the last few months, I'm still fighting to get medical care for Operation Desert Storm friendly fire casualties.
You mean all these years later?
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. And myself and my team, and then we've lost more on our team recently. Another member of our team underwent cancer surgery just here in this last
week. Oh, my God.
So it's the reality, is it? And so we got assigned to do it.
And Doug, let me ask you this, too. I mean, in addition to the tragedy with our troops, and that's the main reason for this show tonight, aren't we also talking about a lot of innocent Iraqis who have been afflicted with radiation poisoning and everything else that is associated with depleted uranium?
And all the other hazardous materials and destruction, absolutely millions of people. So all over the Balkans, all over the Middle East. One thing that we do know from the research, and even the British Royal Academy of Sciences confirmed this, the contamination has reached all the way into Northern Europe and beyond.
Oh, my God. Now, are the people in these regions who live there, do they know about this, and do they blame us for this?
They're slowly becoming aware of it, but just like the U.S. military, all this information has been deliberately hidden from everybody. The other thing what you find is the Department of Defense is my old buddies, all the way up to the Secretary of Defense, and Joyce and I have a very, I don't know how we'd put this, Joyce, a good friend of ours that's in charge of this.
Well, I think you're being kind.
Yeah. And they just totally deny any correlation between the health and environmental effects, even though all of their internal directives' memorandums confirm it all. And they direct total medical care for everybody, not, you know, months or months later, but, you know, within 24 to 72 hours. And you also have a copy of that directive, you know, sent from the Pentagon, confirming all this. But they just totally disregard it because of the incredible, incredible adverse health and environmental effects from not just depleted uranium, but all of the hazard materials, all of the pesticides, all of the immunizations, all of the destroyed toxins from the infrastructure. So you have an incredible toxic soup that is affecting the neurophysiology of the brain. And then on top of the neurophysiology of the brain being affected, I mean, it's just, think about, you know, sucking poisons into your brain. It doesn't work. Then what you have is the real fear of combat, where we've all been there, and the song you led into when I was listening, you know, Barry McGuire's, doesn't say it any better at the end of it, you know, you don't believe in war about what this gun you're carrying.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't get any better than that for explaining PTSD. And then so you have total fear, where you go from complete sheer tranquility to sheer terror in a nanosecond. and you go back and forth continuously. You have the neurotoxicity, and then the last part that after, you know, 35 years in the military plus, I had to come to the realization, with Joyce had to come to the realization, it's all based on lies.
The whole thing.
The whole thing is based on lies. So you have these three incredibly complex interactive components affecting the health, and both the physiological and psychological health of our military. And the VA says, well, we'll help you when you can. Oh, you need a PTSD appointment? Sure, we need you need help, but hey, let's see, we get an appointment, you can get one, you know, you might have to wait a month or 2 months, or, you know, we'll get you when we can, and when we get to you when you can, well, you get, you know, 50 minutes of, well, here's how you can relax.
What was the breaking point for you, Doug? What was the point where, I mean, here you are, you're in charge of the depleted uranium project here to get this mess cleaned up, to treat, protect. Somewhere along the line, you said, enough is enough. What happened?
This is a very personal story. Sergeant First Class John Sitton from Springfield, Illinois, out of the 92nd Medical Battalion, was responsible for setting up all the medical evacuation procedures for the 3rd Medical Command for the U.S. military during Desert Storm.
Okay.
He was totally affected, and I served as a director of the DU project and was working on more projects for the government on environmental problems. Just kind of like whenever they had a problem, they called our team. You know, it was kind of like what we call jack-in-the-boxes. I got a phone call from the pastor, and a phone call from Pastor Sherman Reed, who since retired and lives down near Nashville. And he said, John Sitton wants to talk to you. He's dying of cancer in Springfield Memorial Hospital. The VA has refused to help him.
And you were from that neck of the woods, too, right?
Well, yeah, he's my best friend, not only in the military, best friend in civilian life.
I'm out of St. Louis, so I wasn't too far from where you were.
Yeah, and so got a call. I called the hospital. This was in the middle of the night. The nurse answers the Springfield Memorial Hospital and said, John wants to talk to you. He's waiting to talk to you, Doug. I mean, you guys are best friends. You were in Desert Storm together. You put the projects together. You put the programs together. You guys did it. He's dying. He came on the phone. They put him on the phone, and he said, Doug, I'm with, you know, you and Rollo, our other best friend, our team member, what you do, I'm going to die, but one thing I want done before I die is I want to go salmon fishing on Lake Michigan out of Chicago with my family before I die, and then, even though the military has done this to me, I want to be buried in my uniform.
Yeah. Well, he loved it. He loved this country.
Right. He was, you know, in Vietnam and came back, like all of us, also in Vietnam again because of his expertise. He was recalled for Desert Storm. That's incredibly different. And so I called and I said, okay, we can do this. They have, you know what's Make-A-Wish Foundation?
Yeah, know it well.
They got it all set up, okay? We got him on an ambulance. They transported him up to Chicago to the wherever they get on the boats. They got him on a boat. They went fishing. He went salmon fishing out on Lake Michigan on a hospital gurney with his family.
Jeez, so he wasn't even strong enough to walk around.
No, I mean, not at all, not at all. And so he's fishing and taking his family fishing from a hospital gurney on the back of a fishing boat.
Oh, my gosh.
And he came back, and he died within 24 hours after he returned. Well, we'd been asking, trying to get medical care and everything, and along with him and the rest of our team, and as the rest of our team started dying, all the friendly fire and everybody else in effect, and I said, that's it. And so I had to make the conscious choice, you know, what do I do? Do I speak out? What do I do? And I said, I'm going to still work within the system, so I stayed within the military. I'm still in the military, in the reserve, and went outside trying to get it solved. And to this day, Joyce and myself, and there's a handful of other people, are still trying to solve the problem of getting medical care for all of the casualties in the U.S. military going back to Vietnam.
How many do you think there could be?
Well, you know, when I look at the actual casualty numbers, and again, you have this, Joyce has it, you can post it on your website, what we do know from Operation Desert Storm, and General, this is real interesting, it gets real complex.
Hold on for a sec, Doug. We're going to hit this break. We'll come back with the complete phrase here on how many casualties you think might be out there. I'm George Norrie with our special guests tonight, Nurse Joyce Riley and Dr. Doug Rocky.
All my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. yesterday. Suddenly, I'm not half the man I used to be. There's a shadow hanging over me. Oh, yesterday came suddenly. Why she had to go, I don't know. She wouldn't say. I said something wrong. Now I long for yesterday. Yesterday.
From coast to coast and worldwide on the internet.
Time I wake up Wednesday. Okay, welcome back. We'll get to Nurse Joyce Riley in just a second. But, Dr. Doug, you were talking about casualties and how many we thought might be out there because of depleted uranium. Go ahead.
Well, when we look at the casualties, it's hard to separate what is DU and what is not. I know from the numbers that were totally involved and exposed to DU, you know, what their health effects are, and we know what that is. So that's incredible numbers. What the Department of Veteran Affairs did is publish their casualty report. What we do know from Operation Desert Storm, out of the 600,000 that participated in Desert Storm in 1990 and 1991, the VA in their latest report, which is just a couple months old, totally acknowledged over 300,000 are having serious medical problems, seeking medical care, and as a consequence, they're trying to figure out how to provide that. That's just for Desert Storm alone. That's over 50% of the force that went to Desert Storm has serious medical problems. And the number dead, back in 2008 when the VA quit publishing the report, it was over 90,000 at that time out of 600,000. So over 300,000, 90,000 dead from Desert Storm. That's over 50% of the force. When we go to Operation Iraqi Freedom, Enduring Freedom, the current war, the Department of Veteran Affairs' last report came out in October, okay, so it's 3 months old. And at that time, they acknowledged the total number of casualties was at 711,986.
Jesus.
And now these numbers are there totally, I mean, if you know where to find them, you can get them, but they're hidden from the public. You will never see them reported on the evening news. You will never see them in a local newspaper because we have, with 711,986, just from Operation Iraqi Freedom, 300,000 from Desert Storm, that's over 1 million. And they can never admit to anybody that because we've gone into these wars, and we go back to Vietnam, it becomes incredibly higher. We have incredible casualties, incredible suffering, and the medical care is not available. If it is available, it's ineffective, and in most cases, is delayed and denied. And so as a consequence, and this is a conversation I had yesterday with my own doctors at the Danville VA Medical Center in Danville, Illinois, where I go for care, is if you're going for PTSD care, I mean, like, okay, I need an appointment. Well, we're overwhelmed. We don't have appointments available. We can get you in a month. And so the guy can't get in for PTSD care. If he needs physiological care, he's lucky to get into it. Once you get into it, the first thing you hear is, there were no toxic exposures, there's no health effects, and there's nobody sick at all from any of these exposures. But the VA's own internal reports, and I want to go over this number by number because it's frightening.
Okay.
And it's going to take a couple of minutes, but let's do it.
You're on for 3 hours, Doug. You're not going anywhere.
Thank you very much. We're seeing exactly the same percentages for casualties and diagnosis from Desert Storm to Iraqi Freedom. Almost absolutely identical proportion of diagnostic codes, okay? The numbers are just different. For Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, 15% of the force, or over about 108,000, have infectious and parasitic diseases.
15%?
Correct. 1% has malignant cancers, and the number on my team that have died from cancers and dying and have it right now is staggering. That's at 10,000. Benign tumors is at 44,000. Endocrine, nutritional, and metabolic problems, 31% of the force are 220,000 individuals. Leukemia, frightening, okay? Now, these guys, everybody's extraordinarily healthy when you get deployed, and then you spend 6, 9 months or a year over there, and you come back extraordinarily sick. 25,000 cases of leukemia. 3.5% of the force has leukemia.
Oh.
Jeez. Mental disorders, PTSD, all of this thing. The VA is acknowledging in their formal report from October, 52%, 368,000 individuals. When we get to the neurological problems, and my neurological problems are staggering, as everybody else's, from all these toxic exposures, depleted uranium, pesticides, all the burn pits and everything else. 44% of the force at 310,360 have serious neurological problems. Now, that goes to show what we have seeing day by day, why all these guys are having car accidents or motorcycle accidents or accidents on the job. Their neuromuscular function is so affected that they can't function properly.
Yeah, that's over and above the frustration, the suicides, the murders.
Absolutely.
This is just something that's destroying other lives.
Correct. And now you have to understand, everybody was extraordinarily healthy. 147,267, or 21%, have serious cardiac problems. Now, Joyce is a cardiac nurse. That's her specialty. And, you know, it's staggering. Respiratory, 183,000, 26% have serious respiratory problems. And it affects me. And what we've learned, and the respiratory, you can never smoke again in your life. You know, prednisone and other steroids, they can help control it, but you never know with the weather. It's horrible. Digestive. We look at digestive. This is explosive diarrhea, constipation. You never know where you're going to be. When the diarrhea hits, we call it cracking the porcelain gut. It's explosive beyond comprehension. And for me, they've had to go in Roto-Rooter, you know, and repair all the damage repeatedly. 254,000, 36% of the force.
Now, these numbers that you cite, Doug, could one person have many afflictions? So that number, we may not be talking about, let's say, 200-some thousand separate troops. Can one person, for example, have 6 ailments?
That is correct.
And would be in those numbers?
That is correct. Okay. We have the actual end number for these diagnoses is 711,000. 750,000.
Gosh. Now, but how many people are we talking about? 200,000? 400,000?
No. What's the... 750,000.
That total individuals.
Correct.
It's an epidemic.
Correct, it is.
It's a pandemic.
Well, that's exactly correct. And then when we start getting the unitary, it's over 102,000. We get to the rash. Now, the rash is horrible. The rash is, mine is back again in full force right now with the weather here in Illinois, 148,000. We get to the muscular skeletal system, connective tissue, and, you know, I was lucky. I got incredibly good surgeons at the Spinal Center here in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois. 397,000 have serious musculoskeletal connective tissue problems. We had 3 on our team that have undergone major surgery by the same doctor to repair us. I mean, you know, the doctor's going, what happened, you guys? 3 people on the same team, and I got to go in and do the repair? You got 360,000 with ill-defined, and then the injuries and poisoning is at 201,000. So, and again, the numbers, the percentages we're seeing match from Desert Storm to Iraqi Freedom during Freedom. So when we started following all this for years and years and years and working with it and having written the original reports and recommended the actual medical care, as you saw, you got a copy where the general gave me a medal for recommending medical care. You know, like, thank you, do it, but now we're not going to do it.
Joyce, let me bring you in here for a second. When you and I started talking about the Gulf War syndrome back in 97, you, of course, way before that, was depleted uranium on anybody's mind at the time?
Well, it was, because there was a book by a former attorney general Ramsey Clark. He had written a book about the subject, and it was on the minds, not as much, though, and it certainly was not in my vocabulary that much, because I was not familiar with the munitions, nor was it disclosed how much depleted uranium was being used at that time. So we were more concerned at that time with the vaccines, oil well fires, those kinds of things. And I think all emphasis from the Department of Defense was off of DU. They didn't really want people knowing about depleted uranium. And when it brings us up to the point where we are today and this huge number of people that are sick as a result of their service, I want to add that the PTSD, the problems that these people are having in acclimating back into real life is not because we sent a bunch of head cases over there to fight a war. That's not it. The problem is they've got this neurological damage as a result of the service of the depleted uranium or the toxic effects, environmental effects of the burn pits, as Dr. Rocky said. But let me give you an alarming statistic here. The VA admitted in April of 2011 that in that month alone they got 14,000 suicide calls. 14,000. 450 a day. 450 suicide calls a day.
How could they even handle
it?
That is crazy.
And they've had over 400,000 suicide calls in the last 4 years. I mean, this is unbelievable. We didn't send all these people over there that were head cases just waiting to happen. These are people that had something happen to their brains, happen to their bodies. They come back, and then they are kicked to the side of the curb and told, well, gee, we don't see anything wrong with you, and you're out of the military. Let me give you an example of what happened. This is a troop here. We started raising some money to help out some veterans who just literally weren't getting any compensation. Now, most people say, well, we've got VA. We've got people helping these people. We've got disability compensation. Listen to this. Army PFC Tony Moore, we were raising money, 27 of New Mexico, three tours duty in Iraq. He was hit by an IED. He has been home 28 months, 2 years. He is trying to exist as a double amputee. He has exhausted all of his savings, needs help for his rent, is begging that someone will pay $285 for his rent, and he has enlisted his senator's help to expedite his claim. Wait a minute. Here's a guy who lost both legs, IED, his vehicle exploded, lost both legs, and he's trying to raise $285, and the local Baptist church there helped him with his rent that month. And he has no compensation yet?
That's crazy.
People don't know this is going on. No wonder these guys put a gun to their head.
Yet they can feed the faces on Wall Street.
Oh, my gosh. We could go into that forever. And these guys are desperate. Imagine you come home as a double amputee, and the after your legs are healed up or your stumps are healed up, it's kind of like, well, good luck to you. So these guys are sent out, and they have no recourse, no help. And you have all these incredible Memorial Day and Veterans Day, hanging the wreath, and the president with the wreath, and doing all these things for dead veterans. But you don't see the veterans that are alive, that are struggling, and that are dying, literally dying, for some help.
They're hidden away, aren't they, Joyce?
They're hidden away. They are certainly not available for you to see them. Here's an example, another example. 28-year-old Texan suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder, they say. He appeared on the suicide prevention campaign for the Department of Defense on telling veterans, go to the VA, don't commit suicide. And he himself committed suicide. His name is Clay Hunt. And he himself committed suicide. You cannot get help. You go to a VA, if you call them and tell them that you are desperate, that you want to commit suicide, they'll tell you they can see you in a month, like Dr. Rocky said. That's no way to treat suicide. And so these people are committing the largest number ever of suicides. We're losing more of our troops from suicide than we are from duty in Iraq and Afghanistan. And these are not people that are weak. Some of these people that were the first in their PT groups, their physical training groups, some of these are some of the smartest, brightest people. And yet they are either committing suicide or they're killing somebody that they love very much. And I was dealing with and did go to court with one man who was a captain and a commander of a Black Hawk helicopter unit. And he killed his wife. And nobody can understand why. He did not even understand why.
Do they even know what they're doing?
They don't.
No.
They don't. In fact, they come out of this like they have been in a fog. They say they had missing time. Now, they all don't get together and all the murderers talk about this and say, hey, let's say we had missing time. They all say, something happened. I don't even remember what happened for the last 3 hours or the last 6 hours, which brings to light some strange things that might be happening, and I don't know the answer to that. But when I interview these troops that have killed somebody in their family that they love the most, they always say the same thing. I have no idea either that I did it or why I did it. One young man burned his house down with his wife and his new baby twins in the
house.
Oh,
my gosh.
He doesn't even know why. His pastor referred the case to me. He's on death row or on capital, up for five capital crimes. I mean, these people don't know. If you go in and do a search engine on homicide and Gulf War veteran, you are going to be shocked.
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. Joyce, do these people, I mean, do they have remorse afterwards?
Remorse? They don't even want to live. They say, my life is over. You know, I didn't join the military and go serve my country to come back and kill my family. They have no reason to live. One man told me, I know that if I go and work with you, Joyce, I know that, and try to appeal my case for the sake of helping other Gulf War veterans. He said, they will probably put me on death row. I've been told that by my lawyer. He said, I don't really care. He said, what good is my life when I burn down a house with my twins?
Yeah, he knows. He's destroyed.
Absolutely. And so there's something going on here that is not a bunch of guys who go to a war, come back, and just can't face life again.
Right.
That's not it.
No, there's something else going on. And I think you and Dr. Rocky have put your fingers on it.
Well, and Dr. Rocky has really put himself out there. He is a whistleblower for the Department of Defense, or from the Department of Defense. And with all the work that he's done in DU, he can tell you the inside and out from a physics standpoint. I can't, on depleted uranium. But he gets the calls day and night also from these troops that are desperate for help, that don't know what to do, and are ready to give it up. And I know there's probably thousands.
Well, you'll get some of these calls, Joyce.
I'm sorry?
You'll get some of these calls tonight, I'm sure.
And the emails break my heart after I'm on this show. The letters that I get, the people that are having congenitally deformed babies. I got stopped. I had Gulf War veterans on the side of my car, and I got stopped by a highway patrolman. And he said, I could get in a lot of trouble for stopping you and for what I'm about to do. And I said, what are you about to do? And he said, I need to ask you. He said, my baby was born deaf. And I want to know, is it possible that it was from the Gulf War illness? And he said, nobody will talk to me at the VA or the DOD. And I saw Gulf War veterans on the side of your car, and he started crying. Highway patrolman. He said, I've got to know, is my baby deaf because I served in Desert Storm? You know, and these are the kinds of things that drive these people to the point of you know, not just frustration, but financial. I mean, they're destroyed financially also. It destroys their marriages. 90% at least of all Gulf War veterans are now divorced. So you've got homicide, suicides, but then you've got a Department of Defense who keeps saying, well, gee, we really don't study the number of suicides. We really don't look at how many vets commit suicide. Well, why not then? And why are you not addressing the issue other than, gee, we're going to do another study on this? And what they will end up doing is about as many studies as they've done on the Gulf War illness, costing millions and millions and millions of dollars. And then at all of the end of these studies, they say, well, we haven't been able to prove anything one way or the other. And then you buy the RAND Corporation report, and I mean that euphemistically, but they buy whatever report they want from Institute of Medicine or RAND Corporation that says, well, we find no evidence that depleted uranium causes, you know, ABC problems.
Of course, they're not going to admit it.
They have to not admit it. But what does this mean? This means we have a Department of Defense that is complicit in the deaths of our military. And there are murders out there that are going to happen. Like I told you, I remember telling you explicitly, I said, in this next war, meaning Enduring Freedom and Iraqi Freedom, when we were getting ready to go to war, the second Gulf War, I said, there's going to be even more people coming back sick, dying as a result of this because of the increase of the use of depleted uranium. And I said, you just watch the mental problems and then placing them on the SSRI drugs, which only makes it in spades as bad as it was before, ends up killing these people. And our Department of Defense knows this, but these people are just kicked to the side of the curb.
George, we're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit more with you and Dr. Rocky about this horrible situation on Coast to Coast. Joyce, Beyond Treason, your documentary, are you still making it available for free to Gulf War vets from 1 and 2?
Yes, we are. And if they will just go email thepowerhour@thepowerhour.com, we'll be glad to send them a copy. Just let us know what unit you were in and maybe if you're sick or not. Just a little bit of information if you don't mind. I mean, you don't have to, but yes, we're making it available. And in there is full information on the vaccines, Dr. Rocky's information on depleted uranium, everything that can answer their questions. So I think this is really beneficial for those people that I worry about right now, George, that are hearing about this for the first time. And that's what scares me, is that there are people that don't know about this, and they're hearing this from the country they serve. They went and served because they love this country the way I did. And then to find out this information, that right there is just, that's hard right there for them. And so, yes, we are making it available. If they'll just email us at thepowerhour@thepowerhour.com or go to beyondtreason.com. And all this information is at gulfwarvets.com also.
Doug, you're out in the Rantoul, Illinois area. My commanding officer years ago with the Navy was J.R. Livesay, whose family owned a couple radio stations out that way. I don't know if you know him or not. Do you?
No, I don't, sir.
Okay. Are you, or do you, Doug, get any ramifications from what you're doing? I mean, you're pretty vocal about this.
That's an understatement.
That's what I thought.
It really is.
I don't even know where to begin on that, but what they have is they have very specific individuals assigned by the government to continuously harass, harangue, get phone calls in the middle of the night, hang up, they threats. I've got individuals, you know, one guy, there's one individual he'd call and says, well, run them out of town, beat them up, denied medical care, delayed medical care, ineffective medical care, lost jobs. You know, when you make the conscious choice to tell the truth about the health and environmental effects of military operations, depleted uranium, and you were their expert, the only way they can do is to attack you personally because they can't touch on data, on the information. They don't want the discussion. They don't want the information out there. One of the things that's most frightening with all of this happening, you know, way beyond what's happened to me, is the fact that when we send individuals to war and they come back, every individual that goes over is extraordinarily healthy or they wouldn't be deployed.
That's right.
It's supposed to be.
That's right.
Okay. Unfortunately, today, the proportion of the military that is sick is so astonishing, I mean, incredibly huge numbers, that they're sending individuals that should not be deployed because of physiological, medical problems, or psychological problems. So this is complicating it beyond comprehension. In other words, the guy's already sick, you send him over, he gets worse, there's no medical care, and he loses all hope. Now, when all individuals in the military come back, they're supposed to complete what's called the post-deployment physical assessment form, okay? This is an entire medical assessment that their unit, you know, unit doctors are supposed to complete with them. It's very long and complex and deals with everything.
And there's, I'm sure there's an interview process as well, right?
Correct.
Okay.
And now what has happened with it currently, first off, you have a lot of units that are not doing it, okay, which is staggering. I had a unit commander, I mean, in direct communication, says, I don't have to do it, and there's nothing he can do about it. And, you know, the congressman says, oh really? Okay. The GAO, the General Account Officer, that's the investigative arm of Congress, okay, totally confirmed, totally 100% confirmed, and I'm looking at the report right in front of me, that the post-deployment physical assessment forms, once they were done by the military, were supposed to be placed in the individual's medical file, just disappeared. So now when they go to the VA and attempt to get medical care, there is no evidence that they served. There is no evidence that they had an injury or had an exposure.
Oh, my gosh. Almost no record of their existence there.
So there's, and well, that's what's happened to all of us. There's no record of our existence. I mean, Joyce has heard this over and over again. And this happened to me personally, and, you know, we were emailing on this. The VA finally sent me up to the War Injuries Clinic in Washington, D.C. because this is back in March of last year. Again, because they couldn't deal with me here at Danville or in Indianapolis or at the next level up there, which is in East Orange, New Jersey. So, well, you're going to number one in Washington.
How?
Trying to process to me get there, what the VA was told is I was never in the military. I was not retired from the military. I was never in Desert Storm, never did the research. We got up there. Finally, they had a senior doctor from the Department of Veteran Affairs headquarters in Washington, D.C., came to my appointment, tried to interrupt my appointment by claiming that I was never in the military and nothing had ever happened. And he was, you know, thrown out of the hospital within minutes. But that is how it happened. So now what we see happening with the kids, and Joyce has been involved and responded a million times and a million phone calls as I get, the individuals go for medical care. They know they were there. They know they were wounded. They know they were injured. They know they had the toxic exposure. They know they were healthy before, and now they're in serious physiological and psychological problems. And they ask for help. And they're said, oh, there's no health effects from the burn pits. I mean, that's the official matters. There's no health effect from depleted uranium. There's no health effects from the total misuse of pesticides. And the individual says, wait a minute. I was extraordinarily healthy, and I'm extraordinarily sick. And then they say, well, there's no evidence you were ever there. And so the individual is totally frustrated. He needs medical care. He has no other place to go. He can't get it from private insurance. He can't get a job. And now his family is in disintegration. And then we wonder why spousal abuse is skyrocketing, child abuse is beyond comprehension.
Sure.
The murders are staggering. The number of crimes that are committed are staggering. The divorce rate is kind of like, I mean, the divorce rate is so high in the military. I mean, the stories in the Military Times newspaper, Army Times, or any of those is continuous. And they're in total frustration because they were called, they responded, and they were abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no place to turn to because the veterans organizations, let me tell you, they don't help you. If anybody thinks that they're going to, it's kind of like, well...
Are they in denial about this?
They're in total denial about the number of casualties. They're in total denial about the types of casualties. If you go to the VFW American Legion or any of these websites, you won't find a word one on the casualty numbers. You won't find word one about the toxic exposures. You won't find word one about the psychological effects of combat and on this stuff. And you won't find word one about what is the medical care that's available that is supposed to be provided according to the Department of Veteran Affairs, according to the Department of Defense, zone directives.
How long is the environmental contamination, Doug, with this depleted uranium?
Well, it's permanent. It's forever. I mean, you know, the contamination is not just Iraq and Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. We got incredible amounts of contamination here at the Jefferson Proving Ground, just southeast of Indianapolis. We got it out in the Nevada test site all over the place. We got it at Eglin, Florida. We've got it in Johnstown, Tennessee. We've got it up in the worst area for depleted uranium contamination that we're still trying to get cleaned up. It goes back to American history. Remember our history in the poem on the 18th of April of 75, Hardly a Man Is Left Alive?
Yeah.
Paul Revere's ride, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Concord, Massachusetts is one of the most contaminated sites on the face of the earth from the Starmet depleted uranium plant, as is...
And I bet, and what's their cancer rate out there?
Incredibly high.
Yeah.
You know, we were out there, and I've been out there, and we've done medical conferences, and it was staggering. And so it's not talked about. And then what's happened most recently, and we just did it, I got the French did a new documentary on Fallujah and all the health effects in Fallujah, which was a major battle, current war over in Iraq, and all the health problems. And what they did is look at the incredible levels of cancer and leukemias and all the other respiratory and all the other problems in Iraq. Then they came over here and looked at the incredible number of casualties happened at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, where the children are being born or dying right after birth. And then the birth effects and all of the troops that came back and the sick problems. And it was just, and I mean, this is a brand new documentary from France, and it was just staggering to see it.
We've got to get you guys involved with Aaron Brockovich. you know.
She did a lot of good work, didn't she?
She did. She was on the program a month ago. Joyce, you want us to help you on that?
Oh, that would be awesome. And I think, you know, what we need is someone who can get the attention of powers that are a lot greater than the ones that we've been able to contact. Because, and I'm going to say this, there's going to be ramifications from tonight's program. The Department of Defense does not take this lightly at all, that Doug is telling the truth about depleted uranium. And yes, it needs to go forward. We've broken it out now. It's time to tell the truth. These troops are coming back. They're being abandoned, like Doug said. And we've got to get to them while we can and help them while we can before they end up harming more people. Because it's just a matter of time before that happens. But absolutely, that would be an awesome relationship if we could develop that. Because depleted uranium is not just used over in the Middle East. And from the work, the research that I've been doing, depleted uranium doesn't even require a DOT sign on when it's being transported in this country. In 2003 and 2004, they could transport it anywhere, and they got a special dispensation from the DOD that said you can transport it in trucks and in any kind of vessel or car or whatever, and you don't have to put a radiation emblem on the side of that vehicle. Now, that's just because they didn't want anybody to know about it. Well, you know, it's time that we bring this out of the closet and help these troops, because they're sick. They're suffering. They are in silence, as we said before, and they need some help, and it's time that we give it to them.
One of the things that was most frightening, and Joyce and I, we just did a radio show on this, what was it, 2 weeks ago, where
yeah.
we had a rogue construction crew member, because a DU crate in the exposure of depleted uranium mm-hmm. in what's called DU crate, the concrete for road construction, where they were extraordinarily sick, all the same physiological effects from it, and they were never in the military, they were never deployed, strictly working on the road, working in construction.
Now, is this stuff also airborne, Doug?
Absolutely, incredible airborne stuff. So, you know, when we look at it, the other thing, too, and I want to go over this while we're doing it, the Department of Veteran Affairs is broken up into regions, okay? Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, Michigan are in Vision 11, okay? The director for Vision 11 put out a booklet, and it says, and this is a direct quote, "Some things you need to know about veterans, a clinician's guide to veteran-specific issues." So this is a guide from the Vision 11 director for the VA, which is in Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, to physicians, doctors. And what they're doing is saying, for all of these toxic exposures, here's all the physiological effects that you're going to see. And it covers everything for PTSD, it covers toxin exposures, covers substance abuse, and again on depleted uranium, which again, the area that is really staggering. So the Department of Veteran Affairs Vision 11 director, Barbara Hyduke and everything, this is what they tell the doctors in their publication. Quote, I'm going to read this directly for everybody to understand. "Some of the physical symptoms which may occur as a result of exposure to depleted uranium are sleep problems, mood swings, symptoms in the upper and lower respiratory system, neuropsychological symptoms including memory loss, chronic fatigue immune dysfunction syndrome, skin rashes, unusual hair loss, aching joints,
jeez,
headaches, abdominal pain, sensitivity to light, blurred vision, menstrual disorders, gastrointestinal symptoms, recurrent diarrhea and constipation, nervous system disorders such as numbness in the limb, multiple chemical sensitivity, birth defects in children whose parents were exposed," end quote. That is what, if the doctor even sees it, they say about depleted uranium. And they go through all of this stuff. So inside the Department of Veteran Affairs, if the doctor even does get the information, and I found out my doctors had never seen this or heard of it, even though their own director put it out, they don't have the information. So the soldier knows they're sick, they know what happened. They go and say, what happened to me? Or like when you're putting in a claim, you submit your claim here in Illinois through the state of Illinois, serve VA service officers, then it goes to Chicago Regional Office. what you find out is unless you have the information yourself and going with the documentation, they're not going to provide it to you. They're not going to help you with it. They're not going to tell you, yeah, we know the burn pits and all these exposures cause all these physiological effects. It's in our directives. But we'll never tell you because if you don't know and you don't tell us, we're not responsible or liable. Mm-hmm. So you have a backlog of approximately 1 million claims in the Department of Veteran Affairs for individuals currently seeking medical care that can't get it. So when you can't get the care and you're frustrated, you can't get a job, the PTSD goes bonkers, and everything we're talking about comes apart.
How do we fix this?
The truth?
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty simple. One of the things we've been trying to do, and Joyce, you know, you're helping us now. Again, you've been helping Joyce to understand the Power Hour and other ones. We got a whole bunch of different radio shows. We get it on the truth. Here are the true number of casualties. This is what is causing the casualties. It's not bullets or bombs. It's our own U.S. Department of Defense direct actions or failures to act.
Is this just gross stupidity, Doug? What is it?
It's stupidity and arrogance and the fact that we're all John Wayne and Rambo in the military. We're immune to everything. In other words, we can kill and destroy them. We can contaminate them because we're John Wayne and Rambo. We're immune. We're Superman. Nothing will happen to us. And so you have all of that complex mess coming together, and then you have just the absolute, how do you want to call it, myth and everything. It's got to be sustained. We're the best on earth. We won't harm anybody. We're out there to save the earth. We'll never contaminate. We'll never kill and destroy. We'll never harm the innocent civilian. We'll never blow up and destroy their infrastructure because we want to save it for them. So everybody is finding out this is lies. See, this is like Vietnam. You know, when I went over to Vietnam for the first time in March of 1969, my first deployment, TDY, on an arc light. At that time, I was on B-52s. And we bought into it and everything else. And what we have found out since then, totally in the history book, of the Gulf of Tonkin incident never occurred.
Never happened.
Never, never happened. Totally fictitious.
Might have known about Pearl Harbor.
Yep. And that's all. When you look at the actual reports, that's what shows up on you. So you find out about that stuff. So what we found out, and it was real interesting, because last year, BP, in response to the oil well fire and the stuff in the Gulf, had to sell some assets. So they sold their assets on the oil wells and everything they got from the Vietnam War in Vietnam. They sold their assets, the oil wells and everything in Pakistan and Afghanistan, to Apache, which is an American oil company that does Prudhoe Bay. So it finally all came back around where, hey, we got the oil wells now, you know, which is what Desert Storm was about and Operation Iraqi Freedom was about and all of this stuff is really about. And the troops know this deep in their heart, either subconsciously, because they know, wait a minute, time out. We attacked and invaded these nations. We killed and destroyed. We destroyed their infrastructure. But they never attacked us. They had no capability to attack us. And then the verification for that is the fact that our military is trying to train their military now and giving them weapons. So you sit there and train them how to kill us, and you give them the weapons that we took away from them, give them back to them.
I don't. It just doesn't make any sense.
See, that's the whole thing is because it's who's making the dollar. Trace the dollar.
It's all about the money.
It always has been.
You know, can I enter in? I've got to say something here.
A minute to go, Joyce, before the break.
When we're talking about the Department of Defense, absolutely they know what's going on here. This is not stupidity. If a nurse from Versailles, Missouri can figure this out, then they know full well what's going on here. I talked to Ron Paul about this personally. I had breakfast with him. The man understands what's going on here, and that's why he has got so much support from the veterans right now, is because he knows all about this. And all I can say is, this is absolute arrogance on the part of the DOD thinking they can get away with this, but they're not going to. And it's time that the American public say, I don't want to see any more memorials to dead veterans. You know, we need to take care of the ones that are alive, and we need to put in prison for the rest of their natural lives the people that have been circumventing this process and lying to the American public. It's been going on for a long, long time.
Way too long, Joyce. Way too long. We're going to come back. Another segment to talk about this before we go into phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM with our two guests, Dr. Doug Rocky and, of course, Nurse Joyce or Riley. We'll be back. Joyce, a study shows that these antipsychotic drugs show no benefit for vets who do have PTSD. What's your thoughts on that?
My thoughts on that are that they give them for a reason, and that is, I personally believe that it only accelerates their aggressiveness and creates more problems, to which they end up then either killing themselves or having extreme emotional problems, which they can then go back and say, see, we told you he had an emotional problem. Well, the SSRI drugs only make it worse. And there is a page, a web page. If you go to, we've got it at GulfWarVets.com, but SSRIStories.com. Click on Veteran Stories there at SSRI Stories. That's about the serotonin reuptake inhibitor drugs. You will see there listings of suicides and deaths of veterans, all caused by Paxil, Zoloft, or allegedly related to Celexa, Paxil, Zoloft, Risperidone, whatever. I mean, a whole huge amount of these stories of these veterans. And it only makes the problem worse. They go into this rage even worse. And that's why we're hearing so many, I think, Gulf War veterans did this, Gulf War veterans did that, whatever the story is. That Gulf War veteran on Cake Boss, the show, the reality show Cake Boss,
yeah,
went home and committed suicide because he got kicked off of a reality show.
Yeah, crazy.
And he'd been two times in Iraq, and he was also a paratrooper. I mean, he's been through a whole lot more than getting kicked off a cake show.
There was a drug that is no longer available in the U.S. It was used for weight loss, but I think some doctors were prescribing it for this. It was sibutramine. Have you ever heard of that?
I don't know what the other name of it is, but no, I don't think I have.
Okay, but it's not available in the U.S. anymore, so that'll tell you something, right?
Yeah. Well, none of these drugs are having, you know, positive results, and they're having to add another one to it. My concern is that these troops, at least 80% of the Gulf War veterans that returned from the first Gulf War were either offered or placed on these drugs. 80%. Now, nobody believes that we sent 80% of the head case guys over there to fight a war. Now, the second war, it's the same thing. But now active duty fighting in Iraq or Afghanistan, now we're told 30% of those troops have been placed on these drugs while they're fighting a war. I mean, somebody ought to look at the whole situation and say, wait a minute, why do we have so much depression? Why do we have these soldiers going off and killing all these people that, you know, have nothing to do with a war? What is going on here? Well, they're allowing this question just to be asked all the time without any kind of answers. That's where we need to go. And I also want to add that, remember, in Senate Report 103-97, which has been taken off the government printing office list, it states, and I quote, during the past 50 years, hundreds of thousands of our military have been experimented upon without their knowledge or consent. So we need to consider also what else is going on. Now, in the VA system right now, they're experimenting with ecstasy to treat these troops.
Horse tranquilizers.
Yes. It's an illegal drug. It's a street drug. And they're trying to give ecstasy to these troops to remove their memory. Now, I mean, I just feel there's something else taking place here. I don't know if Dr. Rocky agrees with me or not. That may be my own position on this. But the investigational drugs and all the things that have been done to our military without their knowledge or consent has got to stop. We don't use them as a training ground for proprietary pharmaceutical companies. That needs to stop, whether it's vaccines or whether it's drugs. It needs to be halted. They are not for experimentation.
Do you agree with that, Doug?
Oh, sure. I'll give an example. One of the most frightening things is the anthrax vaccine.
Yeah.
Okay, but let's go what actually happened. What we do know, and this is in the Regal Commission report prepared by Senator Regal for the U.S. Senate, and Jimmy Toot, a good friend of both Joyce's and I, was involved in writing this report, and again, it's been in all the videos, documentaries. We did a full movie on Showtime called Thanks for Grateful Nation on this, starring Ted Danson and Mark Helgenberger. And what happened with the anthrax vaccine? The U.S. Army out of Fort Detrick, Maryland, deliberately and willfully sent the weaponized anthrax to Iraq prior to Desert Storm. I want to repeat, the U.S. Army deliberately and willfully out of Fort Detrick, Maryland, sent the weaponized anthrax to Iraq prior to Desert Storm. That's in the Regal Commission report for total confirmation, the U.S. Senate report. And so what happened then, we made the decision, again, that we're going to blow it all up. But the other decision we made is to provide the anthrax vaccine during Desert Storm. So when we put that program together during Desert Storm, we were told, number one, do not tell anybody what the vaccine is for. Do not record any of the adverse health and environmental health effects, which we saw immediately on everybody. Do not report this whatsoever and deny any correlation. So the anthrax vaccine had that. Now, the other thing, too, there was an adjuvant put into it to make, in other words, we didn't have enough vaccine to go around everybody. So we need to boost the supply. Well, by boosting the supply, you change the adjuvant. And so what they put was squalene into it. In other words, you get 50 doses for every one dose.
Okay.
Now, the Department of Veteran Affairs today in everybody in the military will tell you there's no medical problems from anthrax, all right? Quote, this is again from the physician's directives on anthrax by the VA.
Who can believe anything they say?
Correct. And so they tell you one thing in the public, and then internally they tell you another. Here are the possible signs and symptoms from anthrax vaccination. From the VA physicians is what they tell their doctors. Muscle and joint pain. Paralysis. Chronic fatigue and exhaustion. Severe headache. Weight loss. Chronic illnesses. Memory problems. Numbness in legs and hands. Spasms or tremors in the limbs. Diarrhea and cardiac, end quote. So we look at all of this. We know everybody's getting the anthrax vaccine, Desert Storm, current time. We have the documented diagnoses for everything. We have the toxic exposures. When you look at the internal reports confirmed, these are the physiological effects. And then when we look at the medical reports and diagnosis for the million casualties, what that's happened to them, all of a sudden, we thoroughly acknowledge and realize, now internally they admit it, we have incredible million casualties in U.S. military, sons and daughters, who can't get medical care, and it has nothing to do with bullets and bombs, has nothing to do with combat, other than we failed to protect them, or we used these munitions, or we did this and blew this up, which resulted in incredible toxic exposures and resulting in PTSD, neuropsychological problems, incredible physiological problems.
Is this happening, Doug, with other troops from other countries?
Absolutely. It's happening all over. I mean, I've testified in the House of Lords, the House of Commons, the United Nations. We had a full conference back in 2000, and a couple of years ago it was over in Geneva, Switzerland. It was a farm boy from Thomasboro, Illinois, that's called over to the United Nations in Geneva, Switzerland. You know, and what was really neat there, before lunch, Desmond Tutu spoke, okay, and there's no way to describe what you're in the presence of God's messenger when you're with him. And after lunch, I spoke. And we talked about all of this. And then what happened from that is the Archbishop, the Cardinal, to the United Nations came up to me personally and said, okay, Doug, we know all about you. Do a report, prepare a report, send it back to me so I can give it to Pope Benjamin, and you've got a copy of that report. And so it's all there and it's out there. But what we have happening is because of the incredible economic cost and because of you'd have to admit all this stuff is lies, the Department of Defense and the VA cannot admit that we have an incredible number of casualties caused by our own actions or failure to act, and that medical care is deliberately delayed, denied, and ineffective for all these individuals. It's sort of like Agent Orange, right?
Oh, yeah, same
Agent
thing.
Agent Orange goes back to Vietnam. Admiral Elmo Zumo was responsible for authorizing Agent Orange in Vietnam. Everybody knows that. In my personal face-to-face one-on-one conversations with Admiral Zumo on Gulf War illnesses, I mean, you know, like we're 2 feet apart, it became very, very clear that the military, the Department of Defense, and the VA had absolutely no intention of admitting or acknowledging the liability for the health effects on the U.S. military on a consequence on so-called enemy military or the civilians for which they're liable under Geneva Convention. And where this all goes back to, and you can get this you have a copy of it, your producer does, and it's on the Beyond Treason website. Elmo Zumwalt wrote a report on Agent Orange. It is called, quote, Reports of Secretary of Department of Veteran Affairs on the Association Between Adverse Health Effects and Exposure to Agent Orange, and it was dated May 5th of 1990. Now, nobody in the VA wants anybody to see this. Nobody in DOD wants anybody to see this. My doctors at the VA here have never seen it. They don't have it in the library, never heard of it. But when you come into it and everything else, and Elmo Zumwalt totally acknowledges and admits, quote, you know, first off, he says, you know, and there's a thing in here, and you can get this copy, all the health and environmental effects that we're seeing to this day, and this came up the other day to me when I was at the post office, and says all the health problems are there, then, quote, I further conclude that the Veterans Advisory Committee on Environmental Hazards has not acted with impartiality in its review and assessment of scientific evidence related to the association of adverse health effects and exposure to Agent Orange, end quote. That's what we're seeing with everything. So back to Vietnam, a Desert Storm, Agent Orange to this day is ravaging the Vietnam age guys because we're in our 60s now.
And again, nobody cared.
Correct, nobody cares. And then we're seeing all the same thing with what we call Gulf War illness, which goes back to Desert Storm all the way through. We have everything from Project Shad. I've cleaned up Project Shad so many times it makes my head spin. This is the deliberate use of chemical, biological, and radiological on U.S. military and civilians throughout the United States. I mean, we had a big Project Shad mess on East Main in Urbana, Illinois, where the fire department, the telephone company unearthed the chemical warfare munitions buried out behind the center. Fire department called our team to come over. They're there.
Would it be considered a hazmat to such a situation?
Yeah, incredible.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the Army finally flew in with, you know, the black helicopters, literally the black helicopters to remove it. But none of this ever happened. So what we're seeing is health and environmental effects throughout the U.S. military and our sons and daughters, throughout the U.S. population, as a result of our military operations, extensive contamination in warfare, the extensive contamination on the military installations throughout the United States, both open and closed, and complete delayed denial of any of the health and environmental effects in order to avoid liability and not be accountable. So that's why the guys can't get medical care. They don't have the information. They're not provided the information. However, they know something happened. They know in their heart, they know deep down, my God, I was extraordinarily healthy and now I'm extraordinarily sick. My brain is not functioning. I was thinking straight, and now I don't know which way is up or down. One of the things we call it is, you know, like, who are you, where are you, how did you get here, and where are you going? The soldier, and I've seen this happen, personally seen this happen multiple times with my team, they'll be at one place, and then all of a sudden, where am I? How did I get here?
They have no idea.
Where am I supposed to go, and what am I doing? Happened with my best friend and my team leader, Sergeant First Class Rollo Dolph, one of the true American heroes from Vietnam, the Desert Storm.
Doug, how come you're not sick?
Oh, I am.
Oh, you are?
Oh, he is.
Yes.
How badly?
It's not about me. I got 60% going on up, and like I said, the VA here and locally couldn't handle me, so they sent me to Washington, D.C. for the best of the best, and they're trying to help me.
Okay, but Doug, you have how many times the amount of safe radiation in your body, though?
Well, when the Department of Energy, when I did the research at Nevada and came out of the test, and the Department of Energy, not the Army, did a test, and they told me 2.5 years later that I was blowing uranium at 5,000 times permissible level.
5,000 times?
Yeah, and they never told me for 2.5 years.
You're like a time bomb.
Correct. You know, God's the only thing that I can think is why I'm kept going, but I still have problems and I get help. You know, I can get help because I know where the bodies are buried, and I bury the bodies, literally.
Yeah.
I have the internal reports, so when I go to the doctor, they're freaking out like, oh my, what more is he going to put into our face? You know, he knows what happened, knows what's supposed to be done. But the average kid has no idea.
That's right.
The settlement in this, Joyce, would be enormous if they ever had to cough up from any liability.
Oh, absolutely. And not to mention the civilian settlements that would come from Iraq also. But we've got Bosnia, Macedonia. I mean, we've got Iraq,
Afghanistan.
How much of this would go away had they never used depleted uranium, Doug?
You still have depleted uranium. If it had never been used, we'd have a lot less problems. But you have to remember now, with the other weapons, we have the thermoiray bombs, all the other stuff, the extensive use of white phosphorus, Willie Pete, which was used in Iraq in Fallujah. That was part of the medical phenomena. In Fallujah, current time, and with the 82nd Airborne, you have all the toxins from DU. You have the Willie Pete, white phosphorus that's affected. You have the hazardous materials released. You have the misuse of pesticides. So it's all complex. What has happened today, when we go to war, we destroy the infrastructure. We release all these complex toxic compounds, chemicals, biological, radiological, they're in industry, agriculture, medicine, and construction on the world. Then we walk away. Then we have all of the misuse of immunizations. Then we have the misuse of pesticides. And what we've done is we're thoroughly contaminated air, water, and soil in the idea that, well, if we blow them up, we gave them freedom. We've thoroughly contaminated everything. And we can't admit that the health and environmental effects on everybody is a result of our direct actions or failure to act. It's not any enemy doing this to us. It's us doing it to ourselves.
Did anybody warn them before?
Oh, absolutely. They've been warned so many times. I mean, you've got a copy yourself where we, before Operation Iraqi Freedom Enduring Thing, we did a warning to the world, myself and another British expert, on the exact health effects that we would see current time with DU, and everything has come true.
They didn't listen to you.
They have no intention of it. They have no intention to listen to me or any of their other experts. They don't want to because, again, charge, 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 kill, kill, destroy, deny, deny, delay, and avoid all liability and responsibility.
Yes.
Joyce, take a moment. Tell us about the Power Hour.
Well, I just want to encourage people, if they want an alternative in the morning time to listen to, where we talk about this very type of thing. We're getting to the bottom of these issues on the Power Hour. I don't care if it's Oklahoma City bombing or 9/11 or this issue or Agent Orange or whatever. Is we want to find out what has gone on and where are we today. So you can listen to the Power Hour. You can go to thepowerhour.com. And we encourage all vets to go to Beyond Treason, get a copy of the video, because the video is going to give you the understanding. It's about an hour and 30 minutes long, and it's really excellent. Also, I wanted to state that there is a book. William DeMent sent me this, Delay, Deny, and Hope They Die. And he happened to be a lieutenant commander narcotics squad at NYPD. Delay, deny, and hope they die. And that's what's happening right now. We don't want that to happen, and we want to get to these troops and maybe get on maybe another show we can talk about the answers and the solutions and some of the things that I see that are working for these troops, because I don't want to leave them thinking there's no hope.
No.
You know, but I do want them to understand that once you get into the VA system, you are going to be marginalized. Here's an example. Here is a progress note from a neurology service director who says, and this man, I know him personally, Doug knows him personally also, this patient, he cannot even walk. And this says, obviously, this is completely factitious. He obviously has a medical background, and he's basically dreaming up all these things that he's saying he has. I'm not prepared to say that it's all factitious. But that's my suspicion. The man can't even walk. He's in a wheelchair.
All right, hold on for a second, Joyce. We're going to come back also. We're going to take phone calls, questions, or stories from you vets on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie here. Let's go right to the phones with Joyce Riley and Doug Rocky. We'll go to Dunkirk, Indiana. Larry's with us east of the Rockies. Larry, go ahead. Get us started.
Oh, good evening. Thanks for good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Great.
As I explained to your caller, I have a 50% disability as related to Agent Orange and PTSD. My son and daughter-in-law are both 100% disabled because of their service in Kuwait and Afghanistan. So I have a background to be able to address some of the issues you're speaking about this evening. I want to home in specifically on the PTSD. Our government spends a minimum of 4 months basic training in AIT, depending on, you know, translate that to whatever service you're in, but it's 4 months before they deploy you into a combat environment. You're there for a year. You may re-up for 2 or 3 years. At the end of the 2-3 year plus the four months training, you are trained to kill things that are abnormal to your environment. When you come back and DeRoS out of the service, back into civilian life, there is no deprogramming available. So you're taking out of a combat environment and dropped back into society and expected to just be normal. That doesn't work. What you have to do is, if you have 4 months of training to be a killer, you have to have 4 months of training to be a non-killer, somebody who can live in the civilian life. If you've been out in combat for a year, you need an additional year to get you reacclimated until our government addresses the issue of building killers and then just turning them loose in our society. Then we will never, ever treat the PTSD people the way they should be treated. They're treated to be, or they're trained to be killers. And one additional note, if you don't, and you bring them back here, and the environment is such that something goes haywire in civilian life, and they can't kill. Morality sets in. I can't, this is an American citizen. I can't kill this person, but I need to kill him. I can't kill him. You get into a psychological double bind. They go off in the corner. The ex-service member goes off in the corner and commits suicide. I understand how all this takes place, but what I want to focus on here is not the training that gets you into the service and makes a killer out of you, but what you have to do to, and I hate this term, but I'll use it anyhow, deprogram our soldiers to make them American citizens again.
Mm-hmm. Can they be deprogrammed, though?
If you can program it, you can deprogram it. I believe that to be absolutely true.
I personally don't believe they want to do that, though. They could do that. They should do that. They choose not to do that. And the question is, why?
Well, our responsibility as American citizens is you put people in that office that will do it. Maybe Ron Paul is the only person who can do that. I don't know. But every president we've had since 1966 will not address this issue. The solution is so simple that when you lay it out, it's obvious to anybody. I've gone through the desensitization. I've got PTSD they can't cure. The sounds that I hear, I sat down with Dia, and my family said, "You have this, Dad. You need to get to the VA and get some help for this." I fought them for 2 years. No, I don't. I do not have PTSD. Well, it wasn't until I sat down with the then DSM-3R, which is now DSM-4RV or whatever the numbers are, and looked it up and said, "Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, I have this, this, and this, and that. Those are symptoms to this." And I went down the list, and boy, out of, I don't know how many total there were, 22, I had 20 of them, for instance. Aggravated startle response is one of the worst. I can't be around things that happen on the 4th of July. I mean, I go off in a corner in a hole someplace if I can get into it.
You shake probably at that.
Oh, right? It's worse than that. I want to kill somebody.
God.
It triggers, unless you've been there, unless you have gone through this, it's not just shake. I want to take up arms. I want to put my combat boots on, put my jungle fatigues on. And that's the reason when I applied and had my interview with the VA, psychologist, whoever he was, I said, "Look, here it is." I laid it out for him on a one-sheet piece of paper. Here are my symptoms. Here's how it matches up with the DSM-3R. The best I got was 30% on that. The other 20% is the amount of Agent Orange, and it's actually like 65, but they've dumbed it back down to 50%. At any rate.
Well, it sounds like you could be like a werewolf trying to control yourself.
I have an extraordinary command of my emotional being. If I weren't,
you'd be out of control.
I would be so far out of control. And the reason I didn't lay all this out in an emotional venue, I came in a suit. I didn't come in with my jungle fatigues. I explained to him, when I go in the woods to hunt mushrooms in the springtime, I go in armed. I go in armed because I can't go into a woods without being protected.
All right. Well, let me ask you this, Joyce, and thank you, Larry, for your stories and your input. Couple what he just said with depleted uranium affecting people, then what do you have?
Exactly. And see, you've got enough of the genuine battle fatigue that they used to call it. You've got enough of the genuine PTSD alone. Then you've got the brain injuries on top of that. Then you've got depleted uranium with neurological effects on the brain for sure. And you have some people that cannot control it. Those are the ones that are committing suicide and doing the homicides. So it's cumulative, as you can see. And this just gets worse and worse over time because it's multi-organ. It attacks the heart, it attacks the lungs, it attacks the brain, and the stomach. It just goes on from there.
What do you think about that, Doug?
It's frightening. Let's go over what the signs and symptoms for the VA physician's guidance are for PTSD so
sure.
People know when they need help. Quote, signs and symptoms, recurring thoughts, mental images, or nightmares about traumatic events. Sleep problems or changes in appetite. Experiences fear and anxiety when exposed to events, situations that have similar characteristics to the traumatic event. Being overly alert, startling very easily, being on the edge much of the time. Depression and sadness with low energy level. Unable to concentrate and focus on work or daily activities. Difficulty making decisions. Feeling irritable, angry, and becoming easily agitated. Feeling emotionally numb, becoming withdrawn or disconnected from others. Crying episodes with feelings of despair and hopelessness. Demonstrating an excessive fear for the safety of others, being overly protective. The inability to talk about or face aspects of trauma and avoiding activities, places, or people that remind of the event. End quote. It's a very complex problem. And, you know, at World War II in Korea, they were all on troop ships and it took forever to get home. We came back from Vietnam. I had my last combat mission in like less than 48 hours. I was sitting back home in the VFW drinking beer with my uncles and my dad.
But did you ever go nuts?
No.
No.
No. And there's a whole bunch, but do have problems? Sure, like everybody does. But again, see, we're looking at a very complex issue.
People yeah, but you know what? Does that not surprise anybody? That they get 450 suicide calls a day at the VA. To me, that is so incredibly off the scale that the VA ought to be, or DOD ought to be doing anything and everything they can to say, we got to stop this. But that's not happening. 450 calls, suicide calls a day. That I can't even conceive of that.
What happens when you call the 1-800 number is kind of like scary, because I've called it and I had individuals call it and then we've had to intervene. If you call the 1-800 number for help, and it can be whether you're suicidal or whatever, you just need help. And basically what happens is, well, get to your primary care physician later. We'll try and get you help in the morning. For example, a couple years ago we had a call where the individual called for help to the 1-800 number, and they said, well, we can't help you. We'll get to your physician in the morning. And he was freaking out. He then called one of the other nurses on our team. And myself and her, the two of us worked through, got through the military. We finally found the guy. He was on leave from down in Texas. And they found him up near Cleveland, Ohio. We got to a medical team to him about 4 hours after he first called us for help because it was a failure at the 1-800 number.
All right, next up, let's go to St. Petersburg, Florida. Chuck's with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Chuck.
Hi. Hey, how are you, George?
Good.
I just want to thank both of you guys for your service. I'm a 100% disabled Gulf War veteran, and the list of items you just read off, I mean, it describes me to a T. I avoid everything. I've isolated for about the last 15 years. The VA doesn't really, they do no psychiatric care or counseling or anything else. And I just, where can somebody go to get the help they need since the VA isn't willing?
Joyce, this is for you.
Well, I think, first of all, the physicians of this country are going to have to understand that these people are sick. They have concerns. And they can't just brush them off to the VA. Now, this is the problem, is money. How do people go and get help? And if they have a problem from the Gulf War, then their insurance may not cover them because they've got a pre-existing condition called the military. So this is the problem. This is the problem that they fall into. Now, if they have money, they can go get counseling on their own. And perhaps they can get counseling without drugs, because adding the drugs on top of all of this, which is what usually happens, only makes the problem worse. Now, there's some alternative remedies, and there's some things that we're seeing that are working. There's some diets that are working, detoxing that's working. That's another whole discussion for another time. But there are some things that can be done, and there's some websites to go to. I would go to GulfWarVets.com, but you're going to have to find a therapist in your local area, and you're also going to have to find a physician that will look at Beyond Treason, because Beyond Treason is going to explain to them that there really is a Gulf War illness, there really is a problem related to all of this, because the Department of Defense will only tell them, or the VA, oh no, it's all in their head, there's no real physical problem with the Gulf War, when we know there is, and it's multifactorial, multi-organ, and you have to find a physician that's willing to address that subject.
Okay, good. Thank you. Let's go to Lady in Alaska, west of the Rockies. Hi, Lady.
Oh, good evening. George, I just really want to thank you for having this program tonight.
You're welcome.
This is awesome. The reason I'm calling you is because back around 1980, I was in the Air Force. And back before I joined the Air Force, I was a married woman. I had a son and a daughter, and I had a tubal ligation, you know, for a while. I was told that could be reversed. And the marriage didn't work out, and I ended up joining the Air Force. And I was having problems with my menstrual problems. So they sent me to a place called Keesler in Mississippi.
I've been there.
Oh, I know you have. And they had these two physician assistants, and in front of me they discussed, they used the word candidate. They said I was a candidate. And they started me on a drug called Depo-Provera. And at the time, I didn't know what it was used for. Well, they had me to come in every 2 weeks to report for an injection of this stuff. And one injection was equivalent to 4 months of birth control. So, like, in 1 month, I'm receiving, like, 8 months of birth control. So you go 8 months, that's like 64 months of birth control. And they called in a civilian doctor, and when he came in on the base, I was like just, I don't want to tell you on the air what was going on, but it was just not pretty. And they called in the civilian doctor, and he went through my files, and he says, what the heck are these people giving you this drug for? You've had a tubal ligation. You don't need no birth control. And I want you to know, it rocked my world. I lost my hair. It affected my bones, my joints. And when they gave me a discharge to go home, my mother said, thank you very much. They took my daughter. They returned me a son. I went from a lady that was just, you know, natural-born, beautiful woman, to where I have my features are so masculine that it's really a sin. I go out in public, and people think I'm a transsexual. I was doing hard rock mining in Juneau. I had my own dry room, and the men were so cruel that the joke was going around that I was a transsexual. You know, but I can say one thing for the VA up here in Anchorage. The medical care that I have received up here from the facility has been top line. The doctors have worked with me.
Good.
And anything, I mean, they are very professional up here. I cannot say anything about that.
Joyce, is that a rarity?
No. The experimentation that goes on within the military is unbelievable. I ran into one individual who was involved in a very large group of experimental situations to create a hermaphrodite. I literally mean that was the goal of the experiment. It had to be done offshore of the United States, but it was done. I mean, the idea that they would do this to her, or, I mean, like I said, 103-97, I ask for you to go to GulfWarVets.com and look at Senate Report 103-97. During the past 50 years, hundreds of thousands of military have been experimented upon without their knowledge or consent. That was a statement by the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee. That needs to stop now.
And what is your email again, Joyce? Lots of folks still want to get a hold of you tonight.
Okay, thepowerhour@thepowerhour.com. And if you would just tell me a little bit about yourself, we'll send you a DVD. I do want to say this. There is another DVD set that has about 3,000 pages of documents on it that the DOD is not very happy about the fact that I have them. And it comes in a DVD set with the CD-ROM and DVD combined. Now, that's the one we have to charge for, but the DVD by itself we give free to the veterans, and I want everybody to get a copy. We're already getting requests for it. I want them to get a copy of this to answer their questions. But we do have the documents to support it on CD-ROM.
All right, great. Let's see if we can get one more in before the break. We'll go to Riverside, California. Jim, go ahead. You're on.
Hey, how's it going, George?
Good, Jimmy.
Hey, quick question. I live about 30 miles southeast of Pendleton, and I hear explosions all the time. And I'm wondering if those guys are using depleted uranium and if we're in danger here in Southern Cal.
What do you think, Doug?
Well, I know the 29 Palms definitely using DU because we got casualties from there with all the health effects. As Pendleton, I've not worked with them. I wouldn't be surprised because every place is using the stuff and they're shooting anything and everything up. But that's something you'd have to find out directly. So I do not know what they're shooting on Pendleton, but it'd be a really good question. 29 Palms, absolutely. They've been shooting DU out there forever and ever and ever. When I did the research at the Nevada test site, I had the Marines from 29 Palms on my team to shoot everything up. Because they're the best shots.
Does anybody regulate this?
No, not at all.
That's frightening all by itself, isn't it?
Sure is. And every time I ask the Nuclear Regulatory Commission on that or DOE, that's kind of like the runaround.
All right, well, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. Joyce, do you think it's all about money? That's why they don't want to do anything? They don't want to help the vets?
No, I think it's more than that. And I don't want to think that there is something any more devious than that, but I'm afraid that there must be, because money is not an issue. We have plenty of money for, it seems like, everything else that we want to do. And I want to just say for a second, let's look at the bigger picture. What does this mean? If we do have a Department of Defense that would experiment on our military without their knowledge or consent, I'd like to know how many people that served in the military, you know, like my father, he was in World War II, belly gunner on a B-17. My mother was in the Navy Waves. I can't even imagine that anybody would have signed up and said, hey, I want to join. Yeah, I understand you'll experiment on me, but that's okay. No, we don't join the military to be an experimental animal. I wanted to be a flight nurse because I wanted to be a flight nurse. So if we are using our military as a testing ground for proprietary medical and pharmaceutical companies, then that is another whole issue. And like I say, you know, the Nuremberg Code does not allow for that. So let's have it stop in the military, because what happens in the military happens in the civilian population. And don't think there's not experimentation on the civilian population also by the Department of Defense. So the bigger picture is what concerns me now. It's not just these troops that are being kicked to the side of the curb, the disposable soldiers, and waiting for new soldiers to come in. It's a much bigger picture than that, and that's what scares me.
And, Doug, how about you? What's next on your agenda?
Well, obviously, it's still fine to get medical care for everybody, get the environmental messes cleaned up that the DOD has created and prevent it from happening in the future. I mean, the whole key thing is we can't keep doing what we're doing, resulting in horrible health and environmental effects for which we have no desire to provide care for, clean up the mess.